Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
So as we think about today, as we think about Mother's Day and kind of all of those women and mothers and grandmothers and spiritual mothers and grandmothers that we've had in our lives, I've also been thinking a little bit about those kind of puzzle pieces. And I like this image right here, just of the kind of nostalgia of what you put on your refrigerator, right? And what that says about you, but also thinking about those pieces or those building blocks or those puzzle pieces or something that then makes you you. The wonderful ways that others have invested in you or where you grew up or things like that, that make you you. And then that, out of that, we are kind of called by God to live a life out loud. And so when you think about those pieces, maybe think this week about some of those pieces or building blocks or pieces that you might have in store that make you you. I was thinking about in one of the groups that I'm a part of, our Celebrate Recovery groups, going through this inventory, and it makes you take a look at those pieces that make you who you are. And some of those pieces are really great and fantastic. Others are painful, and you know that, man, I got to spend some more time here. But as we've been doing that and going through some self-reflection, I've been thinking about how some of those pieces of my puzzle have been helping to shape me. And so this week you think, but like, you know, I grew up fairly in a fairly rural, you know, area. And so I was more a country guy than my wife, who was in Alexandria, Northern Virginia, as definitely a city girl. So that when she got appointed to a church in Wolfsville, Maryland, she didn't know what to do because there were horses that got loose in her first church's backyard and were messing up the playground. And she said, "I don't know what to do." And I said, "I don't know, just chase them back into the pen." Now that was on the phone. And she didn't like that idea. But right, you know, like we had these different experiences of like, just get them back in there and then, I don't know, make it so they can't get out again. And she just, you know, like that. But then she would say something like, "Oh man, I love the way that my mountains look." And all of a sudden I knew that like she has now this tile of her city girl life, but then she had this new one of her mountains when she looks over and goes, "Ah, you're getting it. We're not moving back to the city." Fantastic, right? You know, and so thinking about that and thinking about, I was, you know, grew up in a family that typically went to church each week and were involved in church. Think about later in my life, then some of those other pieces that I put together was that throughout college and kind of on to grad school and even some in high school, I guess, I was a snowboard instructor and a kayak instructor. And so I got to see a swath of life and what happens on Sundays when you're not in church. For years, I was there teaching kayak lessons for people and we weren't able to be at church. And so what does that look like? And encounter folks, which led me kind of to a place in my life that I started to develop a heart for kids who had been written off because of special needs or because of behavioral disorders and delays and things like that. And so, you know, I developed this heart because one of those pieces then that had been put into my basket or into the puzzle that makes up me was that I got to see the richness and the beauty of these folks who other people said, "Well, we'll just kind of put them over there because they're at risk or they've been written off." And so as you think about that, you know, think about for you what that might look like. We're going to begin this new series that's called Live Out Loud. And throughout our lives, we take these puzzle pieces or we take these snapshots of our lives and we try to piece it together a little bit. And so as we reflect on how God is working in our lives, our hope is that what happens is that to live our lives out loud, we are people that point then to Jesus. And so, you know, like we mentioned with our finance series just a week or so ago, you know, that God calls us to give a portion back to the ministry of what God is doing. And so whatever that percentage might be, but still we have that vast percentage that we are called to be stewards over. It's the same thing with our whole lives, though. Like God says, okay, so, you know, give me a piece that's intentionally, you're here, you're at church, you're doing something, right? But then there's, you know, 95% of your life that you're called to be steward over, that you're supposed to be living out loud, doing ministry. And so as we get into this a little bit, we're going to be using as the backdrop, as the character, we're going to be studying with this guy named Saul, who later becomes Paul, and see how he lived this life out loud in a way that made such a powerful impact. And so this week, we're going to talk a little bit about the puzzle pieces that bring Paul up and make Paul who he is. And first and foremost is where he was born. Paul was born in a town called Tarsus, which is modern-day Turkey. And so, Chad, can you help us out with that little video, if it plays? There we go. So that kind of orients us to where we are, and then kind of zooming in. So if we see how closely then Tarsus is going to be to not only waterways, but you can see some kind of geographic mountains that are up there. So this becomes, for the first century, a really critical place in history for what's going to be happening, because they have access from trade routes through the mountains as well as then kind of access to the water. And so for Paul, we can even see today that this is a fairly built-up area in Turkey. And so for Paul, or Saul as he was, that this is a critical piece of who he is, because not only then were there a lot of trade routes, so that he would have to know this trade of commerce, and his family was tent makers, and so he'd have learned that and learned all the good skills that went into business making and doing all of that. But then also, this place was so critical for the Roman Empire that they decided to make everyone who lived there or anyone who held land there and their families Roman citizens, which is a huge piece of the puzzle for Paul. Because as we'll see, like later on, when Paul gets into trouble, he'll let it go on for a little while, and then he'll just kind of raise his hand, and that Roman citizenship is like a get-out-of-jail-free card, like literally get-out-of-jail-free card. He's like, I'm a Roman citizen. And then everybody's like, oh my gosh, our bad. Dude, here you go. Take our money, do whatever, don't tell my boss, right? And so that's kind of the work that happens. And so that's a piece, as well as then his family wanted him to study and be this just wonderful, like the best Jewish rabbi that he could have been. Like maybe to one point being part of the elite and a member of the Sanhedrin, which would have been so just, you know, outside of the realm of possibility for someone like Paul. And so Paul was this guy who had this drive and had this ambition to move on to that place where he felt like God was leading him in this very faithful way. You know, anybody ever been there before where you kind of know where you're going to be, or you at least know that next goal ahead of us? You know, he was so focused on what that might be and climbing that corporate ladder or in the, you know, kind of that structure and knowing the law, that what happens is that then he becomes one of the greatest persecutors of God's people. And so we read in the book of Acts that he's the one that's standing by, kind of giving the thumbs up to the first martyrdom of this guy named Stephen. And so everybody, what it says is, lays their cloaks down at Saul's feet, and he kind of gives the thumbs up to then kill Stephen. And not only that, is that he then goes back to the religious leaders and says, now, guys, if I could, I'd like just to go and round up some more of these guys who are followers of the way, who are causing trouble, and bring them back to you. And the imagery and the mentality, like the imagery this week that I couldn't shake, and so I'm going to share it with you, and then hopefully you can't unshake it either, because it's plaguing me, okay, is that if Paul's going and asking essentially the courts to say, hey, I want to bring these guys in, all I can think of is Paul was like a first century Dog the Bounty Hunter. Have you ever seen that show, or that like dude that was on TV for a little while, just like some like gnarly looking guy in Hawaii that's just going and getting these guys and bringing them back? Like, I almost think about that's kind of Paul was like, man, I want to go, I want to get these guys, I want to bring them back. And so on his way to go out into like the place that nobody even cares about, there's this thing that happens with Paul where he is so blindly focused on what he is doing, on how he is, you know, singularly focused on bringing back the people who are messing everything up for the law and the way stuff goes. These people who were professing that this rabbi named Jesus was doing stuff that wasn't in his narrow understanding of what it should be. Man, like he was there and he was so focused. Have you ever known anybody who was so focused that they couldn't see outside of? I'm not going to ask if you've been that person, all right? Because we are real people living real lives, but we're not going to go that deep today, okay? So maybe that happened, and he wasn't able to see. He lost sight of what happened in the kind of surrounding around him, to the point that in Acts 26 it uses this brilliant language, but also what we heard from Robert when he was preaching when he was reading the scripture was that he was struck blind, and then that language of "Who are you, Lord?" which is beautiful, right? Because Paul's saying, "Who are you, God, that would do this to me?" There's this kind of internal acknowledgement of like, "Bah, I've gotten caught, and I know who you are, and I've been trying to run away." And the language there is, you know, why do you keep kicking against the goads? And the goads were this thing in agriculture that get the ox to go where you want them to go. It was this pointed stick, not to do damage or harm, but just to kind of get them going so that if the ox kicked back at this little spiky spear thing, it's not going to feel great, right? And so God's saying, why do you keep kicking back at me? You know that I'm the one. Who are you, Lord? Anybody else see the irony in that, right? God, who are you? Sounds like Moses going, who am I going to tell my people who's sending me? And God says, I'm Jesus, the one that you're persecuting, the one that you're causing trouble with. You know that this shouldn't be the case. But Paul's blind ambition, that thing that drives him, maybe you wrote down ambition or something like that, when you talked about the primary thing that drives you, that Paul's ambition then is the thing that blinds him so deeply. And I'm not saying that ambition is wrong or it's a negative thing, but there are times and places where we need others or things to whisper into our ear that we have gotten off track. Now, I told the worship team that I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant, because this week I was not too happy with the United Methodist Church, because it came out, there were some rulings that came out from our powers that be, that there were five things that happened, or five issues to vote on of how we understand church to be. And all I can think of is that we have been so blinded by the ambition of our own personal understanding of what it is to be the church, that we lost sight of some of the things that matter most. Because one of the things that came down the line, and that lost by like out of like thousands and thousands and thousands of votes, right? By 100 votes. So it was, we needed 2/3 vote for this piece to pass. We needed 66.6%, and we had 66.5%. vote in favor, and bah, okay? And the thing was, is that it was to affirm the equal humanity of both men and women. So we voted, yeah, okay. Thank you for those of you who on Mother's Day had eyes go wide, right? Because I was just sitting there. I didn't have a standing desk like Dennis likes, but I was sitting there just going, how on earth could this happen? How could a denomination who places women in power in the ways that they can lead congregations, how could we vote this down? And the simple answer is that there is another issue that our denomination is wrestling with, another issue that is causing so much friction and division and hurt and harm that then all we get so focused here, and then we see those vote counts come out and we go, I think we did something bad, right? I think we're kicking at the goads instead of saying that every single person is made in the image of God, that every single person, regardless of gender, regardless of, and there's some beautiful language in there about mental capacity and ability, some beautiful things about the way in which your socioeconomic status doesn't matter in the house of God. But we had those blinders on and we screwed up, church. And I said to a few friends this week, I said, I have never been more disappointed about being United Methodist than this week. But rest assured that Faith Point United Methodist Church will affirm all of those things, even if our general conference can't get its head together, right? because we are a people called to welcome, to make sure that those doors are open wide enough that all the love can come in, but narrow enough that shuts out the hate, that is wide enough to allow every person who needs God's grace to come in, but we're not going to let the trolls in. You can be real. You can be, you know, living your real life and everything else, but man, there are some times where we just need a wake-up call. There are some times where we are so focused on those things and that singular issue that we miss out on what God is doing. And so this week, you know, we have these things that get us so focused and we can't remember our purpose. We have these times where our goal gets in the way of the purpose that God has set before us to live life out loud. And so I think that there are two things that I want to just kind of come away with this week, and then one question. So one of those things is that when we have this kind of this blind ambition that focuses us like razor sharp towards what we think our goal is, ask yourself, the memory verse in your bulletin this week says, "Not to us, Lord, not to us, no, but to your own name give glory because of your loyal love and faithfulness." Like if our stuff and our purpose doesn't pass that test, if we're going, man, this is all about me, and it's all about my motives, maybe we need to take a step back because maybe we aren't living that life out loud that we are called to. So that's the first one. The second one is to find those people who are speaking your life out loud into you. And so on this Mother's Day, I want to tell you a story. And it's going to be harder than I thought. So for the Bishop family, this year has been a tough one for our oldest daughter. She switched schools mid-year. She did all these things. And man, I don't know how hard it was for mom and dad to try to speak life into her, but she wasn't having it, right? She still really isn't having it because she's 10 going on 18. And but there was this woman at my wife's church. Her name is Sharon. And Sharon would look at my daughter. She would say, "Man, I had those same struggles that you did. I had those same struggles that you did, and you know what? You need to keep going." She was that goad that my daughter needed. She was the one pushing her forward, saying, "You can't give up. You're smarter than you think. I know. I know there's greatness in you." And she'd be rough with her, you know, saying, "Don't quit." The next day, there would be flowers on our stoop from this woman. She was Eden's spiritual grandmother. She was the one who could guide our daughter like we couldn't. And last week we lost her. Last week we lost her, but we knew that she was living her life out loud in a way that she couldn't ever, that Katie and I couldn't ever. But when we become the church, when we roll deep, when we are the people that God calls us to be, when we say, "God, what is my motivation here? Not my glory, but yours." When we become that guiding goad, when we leave flowers on the corner, when we step into that life that God has in store for us, regardless of those puzzle pieces that come together, man, there is some life change that happens. There is some life change that happens. And so this week, I want you just to reflect a little bit. Take some time. Go through that Monday momentum thing. Think about those ways in which you might be able to tell your story. We have a little testimony tool that we use from time to time that goes through Paul's way that he has kind of helped shape his life that are on the back table. But go through that and ask yourself, what drives me? What is goading me forward? And is it of God? Because knowing what drives us is our first step to living a life out loud, like Paul, like Miss Sharon has been for our daughter and for our family, like the ways in which we can come together as the people of God and share those hard things. So that all those hands that came up when Paul asked, "Who suffered with that kind of loss?" that we can come together and be a people that have that container of hope that allows us to fill it up with joy, peace, love, and grace. Let's